Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and movie extravaganza blockbusters of the spring. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my multiversal compatriots. John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
I think the bar for smartest man in the world was lowered.
That's how we all got there. We made the list. We're far down, but we're on the list. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
Man, this movie blew my mind. It shredded me. It cut me in half.
And ultimately
I was crushed. Yeah.
Well, in case you haven't gotten it from that intro, we are here, and also because presumably podcast titles spoilers have names.
Yeah.
We are covering this week the recently released Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. There will be spoilers, so consider this now, because we're gonna go through it and talk a bunch. So if you haven't seen the movie yet,
Batman is definitely in this movie.
But which one, John? Which one?
That's what we're gonna find out.
Then, you know, maybe hold off until you've gotten a chance to watch it. It's currently only in theaters. I'm sure it will come to Disney Plus sometime in the next 2 or 3 years. Probably sooner than that. But consider this the official blowing of the spoiler horn and our delve into the movie. I don't know that we're doing a recap because it's a movie, and I assume most of us didn't take notes in the movie. So I think we should just...
We don't have it in front of us, so we can't really do it. I mean, broadly, Doctor Strange encounters America Chavez, a young woman who can jump through realities. She is the MacGuffin that Wanda wants in order to reunite her with her children. Hijinks ensue.
Wanda is very bad in this movie.
Trippy. Yeah, a lot of balls get tripped, and
she does some terrible stuff.
Yeah, that's the broad strokes of the movie.
Yeah, so that's the broadest stroke.
She realizes she's made a mistake.
All things are bad.
Kinda.
Yeah, when she scares her children, or not her children, her other children. Yeah, right.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to be worried about there.
Right.
That's it broadly. And there's a lot of little stuff along the way. We've got some Easter eggs, as you might expect for a Marvel movie. We get some hints at possible futures for the MCU.
We get some tie-ins to other properties, of course.
Other properties, as is
including,
mandated.
What If?
Yep.
As we get Captain Carter?
Yep.
Which is super fun.
Yep. There's a whole bunch of that stuff. So
so why don't we start from the beginning and try to make heads or tails out of this thing?
Yeah, we'll start, I think it's a very good place
if we
to
just
start,
jump, like it's already kind of jumpy and warpy, so you know. So go, Dan.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'm done. Well, all right.
So we start with not our Doctor Strange.
Right.
Ponytail Doctor Strange running through a very
Defenders.
Sort of...
I think he's known as like the Defender.
Oh, Defender Strange?
From the Defenders, I guess.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, he's got like a more battle-worn sort of costume look.
He looks a little Iron Fist-y, too.
Yeah, he's
got a weird...
That's interesting. That's
why he...
Yeah, I don't know if that's intentional or not. I mean,
it's not.
So he's running away with America Chavez, and he's being chased by a critter, some kind of tentacle.
I forget what
critter.
The name of that thing is. It's Garganto.
It is a thing.
Garganto.
Is that the same critter that attacks him on Earth later?
No, I don't think so.
Actually, maybe that's Garganto.
I think the Earth one is
right, because the first one doesn't have an eye, right?
Right, it's like lava monster almost.
Yeah,
yeah.
So these are just demons supposedly that are chasing America Chavez, and they're controlled by somebody, and we don't yet know who it is.
We don't even know that he's controlled. Like that thing seems pretty autonomous.
Well,
he
and Wong figure out that there are runes on the creature, right?
We're talking about the very beginning,
the opening scene.
Right.
The first one, we're confronted with Defender Strange, who is trying to save America Chavez. He gets this thing in a ball of confusion, and it doesn't work. He can't hold it, so he decides in order to save the universe, he's going to have to kill America Chavez. And he by stealing her power, starts to do that. She says, "You're killing me," and he says, "I know." So we're pretty clear on what the stakes are. We know exactly what's going on. critter number one ends up escaping and killing him before, maiming him before trying to take out Chavez for itself. Strange manages to rally a little bit and free Chavez from his clutches so that she can fall through this portal, this star-shaped portal that she's created, and manages to escape that way. Cut to New York, right? Is that it?
Yep.
I think so. Yeah.
Well, so I think we should start out talking about the last place that we encountered Doctor Strange was in Spider-Man No Way Home, yes. In which he caused some multiversal shenanigans. I thought it was interesting that we've had so many cases in which in the last year where we've broken the multiverse, right? Like we had Loki, we had What If, we had Spider-Man, and now we have Doctor Strange. And my first question is, are any of these things related? Because there doesn't seem to be a straight line drawn between any of them.
So according to statements from Feige, which I know nerds like this kind of, I'm a nerd too. Don't get your chess club membership card bent out of shape. The reason I don't like this so much is that you want something to be in the text rather than like from the meta stuff and like sure, in some kind of interview.
Yeah, right.
Feige said it's what happened in Loki, that right. Loki and Sylvie basically bust everything open, and that's why we're having all of this stuff. As far as I'm concerned, anything that anybody says outside of the stories may as well just be them making the fans feel better about whatever. Right.
Well, I mean, this goes back to the classic. Really matter, right? It goes back to classic, like Ridley Scott saying whether or not he thinks Deckard is a replicant, right?
Yeah,
which is like
exactly.
You gotta
doesn't matter.
You gotta show your work, right? You gotta right, do right, it. If it's not within the movie itself or the story itself, you're speculating. And even if you are the person in charge of the MCU, your speculation is roughly on par with everybody else's.
Right. You could change your mind easily.
Yeah.
But it also gets to like a very, we definitely don't have time for this, but like that sort of deep conversation about is the intent of the artist what matters, or is how the work is perceived? Like is the art in the eye of the beholder, or is it in the intent of the expression of the artist? Both can be true. We're, like that's beyond our pay grade. So whatever, Feige, who knows?
I prefer that explanation because I think it makes, because... Because Doctor Strange looks like kind of an idiot in Spider-Man No Way Home. I mean, he cast that spell very nonchalantly, does not ask Peter very many questions about how the spell should be cast, you know, like what his requirements are. Get a requirements document, Doctor Strange. And he doesn't come out looking all that great from that movie.
Well, no, it looks like a bonehead. Yeah. Like, the only way to save him really is to be like, well, that did not go well because the nature of the universe changed under his feet. Like he was expecting one thing and then he was dealing with something completely different.
And we know, it's very explicitly stated in Loki what's going to happen if they, kill Kang. And that's what you can see it. You can see it happening through the window.
So I do, I like, and I subscribe to Feige's opinion or what he says. It's just when this stuff isn't textual and there's so many weird moving cogs and pieces.
I'm willing to take it for now anyway.
Yeah, I think
I recognize that it might change later.
The trick here is also that, and I've seen a number of people point this out, and you know, with occasionally somewhat in a sort of complaining vein that like every Marvel movie now assumes you've seen every other Marvel property, and it does, you know. I think they're trying to walk that line of have this be a movie that is self-contained in the story it's telling and yet also links into larger stories, which is a challenge with all of the Marvel movies. Yeah. And I think here the problem is that in some ways they, at least when they started making this, my guess is they're like hedging their bets a bit. And because I assume this was in production before Loki even came out. And because I know I read an interview somewhere which said that Sam Raimi had not seen all of WandaVision when they started production, because I guess it wasn't entirely done. And so it was up to Elizabeth Olsen to sort of go for the through line of where that character's, you know, where Wanda's through line is, because she had filmed all of it, so she knew everything that happened. Mm. And like, she had to sort of be in charge of her character's progression in many ways. So like, a lot of the same sort of things, right, where it's like, well, it's just a hard logistical problem, because you need to like finish production on all these different things, and you know, are the sometimes stuff's going into production, as sometimes things are finishing up production and you haven't locked in everything that's happening. So all of that's a challenge. So I think they're trying to juggle all those balls, and it is kind of, it feels like we get increasingly to the point of, if you've ever read a Marvel comic and somebody mentions something in a bubble and then there's a little asterisk and the little footnote, yeah, that's like, see issue number 434, mm-hmm, of Fantastic Four.
Right.
And it's like, that's kind of where we are now, except they're trying to handle it a little more delicately than that. But it does, yeah, mean that some stuff gets lost.
And they're giving, I mean, you know, maybe that is the real reason, but they give you a couple other ones, you know, like from WandaVision, you know, the stuff that Agatha says can make you think, oh, that's how it happened. Or if you only saw that one, you have an explanation. And if you only saw Spider-Man No Way Home, you also have an explanation. Even if those aren't the right explanations, you don't really need to know what the quote right explanation is.
Right. And, right, and in some ways, you don't even need one in this movie.
Right. Right. Yeah. Who cares?
Right. Like, it's right, it's America, yeah, like, Chavez has been bouncing around to all those different universes and then ends up in ours. Right. Like, that's, yeah, the precipitating,
right,
event.
Right.
Right. The mechanics, I mean, not to get,
we've
too
all seen
broad,
Star Trek.
Right. Exactly.
We've seen Worf travel through
say,
multiple universes
eight
before.
In the background, yeah, of one shot here. And
oh my God, if you think we're not going to do a full segment on Captain Pike and Captain Picard on the same, come on, we're getting there. But the thing is, the multiverse, like most things in superhero movies and most things in most stories, is just a trapping to tell a human story, right? It's not... It doesn't matter. The mechanics, right, of how it happened don't matter. Like, let's not get bogged down in the weeds, yeah, there.
I mean, as long as they're, you know, relatively consistent. Like, well, I mean, I would, well, sure, I would enjoy it less if it was just clearly obvious they did not care. I mean, like, you know, just to
Justice
make
League?
Another Star Trek reference. Oh. The 2009 Star Trek movie. Like, we're going to,
yeah, that
we're going to transport
lucky
people, you know, to a ship that just flew away at warp and is probably like 4 light years away.
Yeah,
that bothered me a little bit. No one's ever done that before. I don't think you should be able to do that. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
J.J. Abrams
9,000 times by now.
J.J. Abrams loves breaking faster than light travel. That's his thing.
Yeah, that's his.
Well, I mean, I was just gonna say, like,
J.J. Abrams, but
he's fine. But like the Starkiller base thing, where it's like, what? How did that? It doesn't make sense that you can blow up. Like, who cares? Doesn't matter.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So I agree with you that the multiverse is more of a framework in which we can tell stories, right, but that you have to maintain a certain degree of internal consistency, if nothing else, so that it doesn't take you out of the story. And I think
don't try to wrap your head around how the multiverse and timelines fit together, because you will go Doctor Strange.
Oh, I was going to say you
whacked
would
out. You will get.
I was going to say you'd end up like Black Bolt. well, but we're jumping ahead. So I think what's interesting to your point, John, about Doctor Strange looking like kind of a dope in the Spider-Man movie is that if we have a through line for Steven, it's that his driving trait is arrogance, right? Like that is kind of his motivating factor in all of his movies, even if he's sort of softening over time. Like that's his whole kind of personality. And that's what gets him into trouble, is that he is basically just super cavalier about like, I could probably do this.
I don't know that he's definitely arrogant. Absolutely. But he's also very smart and apparently studious. I mean, he learned how to be a doctor. He learned how to be a magician and he studies a lot. And he's a quick learner. That whole thing is a little bit, it's okay, right? It's all right. I'm not like completely bent out of shape about the thing that happens at the beginning of Spider-Man No Way Home that makes the rest of the movie happen. He just does look like kind of an idiot.
It's fair. I do think, I think what's tricky in some ways is first movies, especially in the Marvel formula, have a very specific formula. Like, it's about a person coming into their power, right? In almost every case, it's like, we're going to tell a story that's about somebody figuring out what it means to be this superhero. Second movies are a little harder because you can't just replay those notes. You got to come up with a new way to challenge them. And I think what's interesting about this movie is that in some ways, although it is a Doctor Strange movie, it also provides big showcases for, to some degree, America Chavez, to a larger degree, Wanda, who takes up probably, I mean, like they've described her in a lot of the interviews I've seen as like a co-lead, basically, which I would think is pretty much the case. Like we spend as much time with her and see things from her perspective as we do Steven in many cases. So
far more so than Wong. I mean, she's the villain.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but she's not just the villain, right?
Yeah, I think that's where it gets interesting is like, you know, this is a character we've known as a protagonist, both on the movies and in her own TV show. And now I think it's tricky, right? Like, I mean, villains are, I think, hard, and the Marvel movies have struggled with them a lot. And some are better than others.
The hits are great.
You
know, there's a lot of middling, and the lows are just total stinkers.
Yeah.
I can't even think of a low because they probably stank so much.
Malekith?
No. Malekith is
probably the worst, right?
Yeah. I think I have a list someplace.
Let me see if I can find it while we're talking. Keep talking.
But I think.
Oh, actually, you do. I remember you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I think there's been a lot of discussion over Wanda's role in this movie. And I think this is one of the meaty parts to discuss because there's a lot there. And I think there's a lot of different interpretations over that, over her role and over what she's doing here.
So let me ask you, did you, I guess I'll go first because I'll pony up. I liked it. I bought it. I can see why some people may be upset that she's overreacting or doing something weird. The end of WandaVision, she's kind of gone through the grieving arc, right? And we are led to believe, at least, that she feels bad for what she did or the horrors that she visited upon Westview. And yet the very last thing we see is a part of her, an aspect of her, palling around with the Darkhold and her kids screaming, which definitely leads into this kind of movie. So I don't think it's too much of a leap.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
It's a little disappointing because I feel like the progression of this movie is essentially the same progression as took place in WandaVision, because she's like, on some level, she wants this thing, and so she makes it happen. She's going to make it happen. And then she realizes that she's hurting people, and she tears it all down.
Yeah,
it's basically the same thing.
It's just amped up a lot more.
I mean, she's in because, you know, and it's because of the Darkhold. I also think that, I don't know, given the... Well, it's interesting because I think there are different signals from the end of WandaVision. I mean, the thing that she does to Agatha is right. She is being cruel to her.
Yeah.
Like, she's trapping her in that ridiculous world, making her live a false life for, you know, however long until she can get out of it, which I'm sure she will because she's got her own show coming up. But... but she does sort of like smile when, you know, it's like she does have like a mean streak, doesn't she?
Well, and I think there's also there was a valid point, as many people discussed at the time with the end of WandaVision, that she doesn't really atone for any of the stuff she does, right? She kind of slinks away, and it's people felt unsatisfied by the fact that, you know, that this character had visited these terrible things on people and hadn't even really like apologized. It was just kind of like, I'm just gonna go over here. And some
if anything,
of this...
going back to Strange looking like a dope, the fact that he shows up and he's like, oh, I'm not here about Westview. He's like, yeah,
why,
you should
why
be.
Aren't you?
You definitely should be.
Has anybody checked in on this?
If you could walk into that garden full of like idyllic, whatever they're called, like
they were apple. They were supposed to be apple trees.
Apple trees. Oh, guess what? That's a Judeo-Christian vibe going on there. If you can walk into that garden and not know that you're in the middle of an illusion, like you're doping it up pretty good there. Like you should definitely be paying a lot more attention to what happened in Westview, because that was some messed up stuff.
Right. And I think this is another case of, to a certain degree, the MCU wanting to have its cake and eat it too, which is we don't want you to have to feel like you have to have seen WandaVision, but we are going to continue the story we saw there.
Yeah.
And I think that's your point, John, that there is some repeating of beats because of that. And it would have been cleaner in some ways if the end of WandaVision had not ended with her seeming like she'd realized the error of her ways, or at least had had tried to play it maybe ambiguously, but it like it kind of did it clumsily. And I think maybe if the, is that they didn't know exactly how this was going to lead in, or you know, the fact that we've got somebody else directing a movie over here, like there's going to be some mismatch. I don't know, but to either take it on their own, I think is fine. And I agree that it didn't seem a huge leap, and I think it continually escalates, right? And I think that's one thing I liked about the progression in this, is like she certainly has a lot of agency, and you can't argue with that, right? Like she is doing all this stuff and wreaking all this havoc, and it's, you know, you can argue whether or not you think it's the impact of the Darkhold. Personally, I think it's more of a Darth Vader-ish situation, honestly, where it's like I've got this power and I'm trying to use it for things that I think are quote unquote good. And
I'm not entirely sure how much the Darkhold corrupts her so much as she is an aspect, like it is an aspect of her.
I think it's pretty corrupting. I mean, she kills a whole bunch of people.
But in the sense that power corrupts in general, or just in the sense that it is evil and
it is
corrupts
evil,
anything?
That it is evil.
See, I'm not sure
I agree
with that.
They're entwined, though, right? Because, like, the shrine, like, they've, like, when she visits Mount Mondor. Nope.
I don't remember what it's called. Mount
Wondegore. That's it.
Wondegore.
Is it Mount Wondegore?
Yes.
It's the name of the mountain where.
I kind of remembered that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's like the place where her and Pietro were sort of born. It's where the high evolutionary did his bovine.
Yeah, he created that
lady.
Or no, that's person. Him, right? He is the cowhead.
Is he bovine?
I don't know. Now.
I can't remember. Anyway, whatever. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on there. So that's what it is. But when she gets there, she's like, oh, this has been built for me. Like, this carved in the stone is her visage or something very, well, okay, I guess it's an abstract Scarlet Witchy kind of thing. But I was not sure if she's just a manifestation or part of her is a manifestation of this ancient thing. Like, it's weird. It gets tied into, like, is Wanda is one thing, because we see in alternate realities Wanda's something else. But then there's the Scarlet Witch thing, which is almost like Phoenix Force jazz on, like, you know, sort of juicing her up a bit.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I mean, as much as comic books can make sense. Yeah. I think there's more than one thing going on here, and they never quite come out and say it one way or another, right? Like, they're never like, oh, it's the Darkhold. If we free you from the Darkhold, you'll be fine. Because eventually she does free herself.
I don't know that, I'm not sure that they say anything about freeing anybody from the Darkhold necessarily, because they go to the other, you know, Strange goes to the other reality where the other, you know, the evil Doctor Strange is, and he's been made evil by the Darkhold.
Yeah, oh, and at the end of this movie, Strange has the third eye, letting you think that, like, well, there's some bad Darkhold power going on in him. Like, he collapses on the street, very Sam Raimi style, and has a little scream.
Yeah. Right, and I think, you know, there's certainly the argument, this is, you know, maybe also above our pay grade, but it's the argument that, like, is this thing corrupting in and of itself, or does it tap into a streak of these temptations that certain people may have more than others, right? Like, I mean, in both cases, it seems like it was a seduction of something that made it possible for them to do something, especially like something potentially like good, quote unquote, but go about it the wrong way. So I don't know. I think to your point, John, that you said earlier, like the fact that we know even before she starts using the Darkhold that she does have the possibility of doing something cruel as she does to Agatha. Suggests like there's a wedge there, right? Where it's like it's going to amplify maybe your worst tendencies, but I'm not sure that it's something to my mind that I felt like I didn't want to take away all of her own decision making process and say just like, oh, it's just power she can't control, because it does feel like that's a bit reductive,
right? Like, it feels like it would
it's what makes her go to that extreme, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously she has the intro, you know, I'm sure she innately wants, I mean, obviously she wants her kids back, and maybe on some level certainly is kind of willing to go get them from someplace else. But the fact that she just murders people left and right in order to do it, I feel like that part is probably the effect.
So you think, just to oversimplify things and perhaps be stupid. You think she's an angry drunk type thing? Like once imbued with this sense of power,
is that
she expresses? I mean, like I feel like Cap or Viz would or Vision would be less affected by this thing, right? Cap's not going to be reading it over a cup of coffee on a Sunday morning, but no. It feels
have you guys
like
read
not.
This Darkhold thing? It's yeah. Pretty interesting.
Just
it's chuckling as he reads it. Nah, I'm not going
to
buy it.
Yeah, it's in his little book of things to catch up with. Oh, the Darkhold.
I will say, indeed. I think her fall and like sort of tragic storyline here is to me at least way more believable than, like, you know, I already compared her to Vader. So, like, I'm throwing that Anakin Skywalker fall into that, where Anakin decides, and, like, spoilers, you know what, I guess I'll murder some kids. In what seems like a kind of out of nowhere move, which is you cannot argue in this case that we have not bestowed upon Wanda enough backstory to understand what she has gone through, you know, having to, you know, kill Vision, basically, have Vision come back to life, die again. Then she, you know, resurrects the whole, like, the Westview, loses her kids, like, all of this, right? Like, you can imagine the trauma inflicted upon a person from all of that loss and be like, yeah, I can understand why maybe she's not okay and that this is a bad outlet for her.
Yeah.
So, from that perspective, I felt fine with the way the story went. I was colored a little bit because my wife leaned over very early on and she's like, I don't like what they're doing with this character, and and I was like, all right, I take your meaning. And there's stuff there that you can certainly critique.
If you can do that, I mean, even if you can go there with the character and have it make sense, is that really what people are tuning in for with these things, like to see their heroes be super bad? I mean, she has obviously in the comic books done some stuff as well.
Yeah.
And but I'm not sure that those are the best, like, portrayals.
Well, she started as a baddie even in the MCU, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't find it that much of a stretch.
But
honestly,
but I'm with you, John, on the, like, should you, is this, because this is a story you can tell, is it a story you should tell?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, we haven't,
with great power, Dan.
We haven't had a ton of stories where we really, like, the closest analogy I could come up with was, like, Civil War, but Civil War was much more about, like, these two guys have very different viewpoints, but neither of them was like, let's go murder a bunch of people, right? Like, you can kind of take either side.
There's a movie that she's in where she accidentally kills a bunch of people and is completely devastated by it.
Right. Yeah. So that's certainly, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think there's an interesting story perhaps to be told with, you know, people who are very powered and maybe, like, give in to the temptations of doing things that are not the right way.
She's also had a lot of trauma, right? Like, I think Ultron managed to recruit her because of this innate thing that was like, like an anger and that kind of thing. I think she overcame it with, you know, with her love for Vision and the love and the camaraderie she shared with the rest of the Avengers kind of thing. So, bereft of that and in bereavement for the loss there, I could see her reverting to like an angry kind of thing, which we kind of got. I don't know if we got that in WandaVision. We got denial, effectively. Right, that was denial.
Sure,
And maybe this is the anger phase, I don't know, but we kind of got that in WandaVision too. It felt like that arc got wrapped up, and now it's like, okay, like, to John's point, let's do that same thing again, but on the big screen and a little bit more wacky.
Right.
Well, like a little bit wacky in a different way, I guess.
Why don't we move on to Raimi?
That's Sam Raimi, who, of course, best known probably for his earlier Spider-Man movies starring Tobey Maguire, as well as basically made his name in sort of schlock horror, for lack of a better term, comedy horror. Is on full display here. I came out of this movie saying, well, that was a incredibly Sam Raimi movie, I thought.
I really admired it for that.
Which I really liked.
Yeah, I agree. And I saw people...
We were talking about, it was just last week, we were talking about Marvel needs to do things a little bit differently to make things more interesting. Yeah. And I think this was an example in terms of tone of them doing exactly that. I think they could even go further, but I thought this was like a step in the right direction. And just like so many scenes where that, you know, you can just see his influence coming through.
Oh, yeah.
And when his demons are sort of swirling around Strange, and then they go and they swirl around Wanda, and you get that, like, that zoom into her wide eyes, like,
Or the scene
you've
with
seen
the,
a million times in Army of Darkness.
Yep. I was thinking of the scene where, like, the they're hiding in the Camartage and the doors slam shut, like right before she comes out of the mirror, and it does the sort of tilt camera tilt as the door slam shut. I was like, oh, that is a Sam Raimi shot, patented. I mean, I saw.
I think he was an excellent choice for this movie. I actually kind of wish he had. Not that I think the person who did the movie, the first one, was bad or anything, but I think he would have been a better fit for, like, all of these Doctor Strange movies. I think he's a less good fit for Spider-Man. Honestly, I think he's a terrific fit for Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I think
he nails like the Doc Ock scene. The reason that people like the second one,
those
I
are
think,
good,
is because of that kind of like crazy tentacle arm.
But he's good with the bad guys in that, as opposed to the good guy.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he's terrific. I mean, I guess our Stephen Strange is the good... Well, he's definitely the good guy of the movie, but he's kind of, like you said, a bit of a dummy, kind of screw stuff up. And one of the arcs that I like for this character is that he does end up confronting, like, how crappy he was to Christine, right? So that's good. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all handled in a way that has a very specific... It's not... Like, it's schlock horror... Schlock horror is almost the genesis of comic books, right? Like when it was like Creature of the Week or Creature of the Issue kind of thing, like Swamp Monsters and all of that kind of stuff sort of predates the comic book genre, and it infuses it a lot. And to have this weird, trippy stuff married with that feels like a really natural fit. It's like a little bit of peanut butter and chocolate sort of vibe going on. They're not different, they are aligned in that they are over the top and they share some sensibilities and even some styles. And Raimi nailed it. He just nailed it. Even like that weird other realm at the beginning that we see that's very sort of Jack Kirby, like floating crap in a weird purple space, is very comic booky, right? And like that worked and he nailed it. And that's outside sort of the schlock horror thing that he's used to shooting, because he had like 50 bucks and a case of beer for to bring his friends over kind of thing. But this was like, well, you've got
stuff with claymation,
right?
Yeah, exactly. You've got 50 million bucks, but guess what? You've still got Bruce Campbell on your side. So it's
goes
fine.
A long way for you.
I love that the Bruce Campbell gag was that he, Doctor Strange, curses his hand to beat him up, just like in Army of Darkness. Yeah. It's perfect.
A great throwback. I mean, Bruce Campbell... I love Army of Darkness unapologetically. I'm a huge Bruce Campbell fan, and I just, anytime he shows up, is always a delight, and he's great in his very, very brief cameo here.
And then, you sit through the credits and he's just there to tell you that it's over.
But I want to say on the Raimi front, like, I sent you guys, I don't know if either of you read it, but there's a essay in Rolling Stone basically critiquing that, like, this wasn't even Raimi enough. And I was like, I don't know. I feel like this is the sort of thing we've talked about before, which is, Marvel should loosen up and give its directors and creators more leeway. But you also are creating something that is fundamentally a studio film, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And you have to sort of adhere to the house style. But you can, there's a lot of room to play within that. And I thought this was, I agree, a great example of how you can give somebody a lot of free reign within a film that is still trying to fit in as part of a larger whole. I think Taika Waititi has done that really well as well. So, you know, it's certainly not out of the question. But yeah, this is definitely feels like one of the strongest sort of narrative voices that I think that we've seen in a Marvel movie.
Yeah, I agree. It's not like the old studio system where these people are locked up and all they're going to do is churn out Marvel movies, right?
Yeah.
Like, Sam Raimi can do more Sam Raimi-ish movies elsewhere. He got a lot done in what's, you know, effectively a pretty constrained space. And I feel Marvel is better at accepting directors and different visions of their world than Star Wars is being, right?
Sure,
You know, I don't want to get into that thing, but, like, there was one particular director recently that everybody seemed to really dislike. And that was the most boneheaded thing ever, because that's a good movie. Now, this is not as Sam Raimi as you could possibly get, but it is his sensibility brought to a character and a I don't like the word, but to a property where he can really explore some really fun things in a really big budget kind of way. And mm-hmm. along with a big budget comes with a set of expectations that, like, well, you can't turn everybody away at the door because we want their money. So I honestly, the way it was balanced, I thought it was really, really good. Visually brilliant. The characters were well realized. The storytelling was storytelling that would have worked even with like a tenth of the budget, a hundredth of the budget kind of thing. Like it worked. The characters made sense and the plots made sense. And at no point really was the spectacle the point so much as what was happening. Even when we get we have a super team, like a real powerful super team, just get wiped out. And that's not the point. The point is just to prove that, you know, one is pissed and she's just going to start murdering people.
Right.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think this movie's about like Sam Raimi on like 2/3 power, maybe. Like it's a lot of Sam Raimi, but like,
yeah. You can still see it. I mean, you, oh yeah. Well, if you know what you're looking for, you can definitely see it.
Well, let's talk.
I think actually you can see it.
I think we should. I think this is a good place to talk about sort of one of the set pieces, maybe for lack of a better word. But the Illuminati, and especially the fight that the Illuminati undergoes with Wanda, which is very much in the Sam Raimi kind of horror-ish genre. Yeah. I think is one of the. It's a weird segment of the movie, but it is probably one of the standout segments of the movie.
Oh yeah.
Well, wait. Before the fight, do you want to just
In terms of fan service, it's
sure. Yeah.
Right. Before the fight, do you want to just set the whole thing up?
Yeah. I mean,
why is he there? Who are these people? What's going on?
Doctor Strange and America Chavez find themselves in another universe, which is some ways like their own, but they are captured by Mordo, who in this universe is also not really a big fan of Doctor Strange, despite claiming to be his buddy. I find it interesting as a side note that we do not see our universe's Mordo at all in this movie.
Yeah. That was interesting. I just sort of, I kind of assumed that it was our Mordo.
Yes. Yeah. But this makes
the trailers
more sense, but is not, we don't really catch up with him at all or know what his deal is here.
Yeah. Although he says something about him trying to kill him.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Seems like they have encountered each other since the end of the first.
Oh, right.
Movie.
Yes, because they left off
off-screen adventure. That's
they don't
not mentioned.
They don't get left off and like hating each other, right? They're just sort of like, I don't agree with you, and I'm going to go away.
Off. Yeah. He's like, I'm going to help you, and then I'm done.
Yeah, and then at the end of the movie, he
goes
and kills
the other guy. Yeah,
yeah,
Brad, blah blah blah,
whatever the guy is who first found it.
He's a famous guy whose name I should remember. So
the actor, human, yeah,
yeah.
So, in any ways, in this universe, he, Steven, and America get drugged and dragged before the Illuminati, which is this organization that's been created by this universe's Doctor Strange to.
And they have Ultrons running around as their helpers.
Be super special. Yeah. And we get a roster rundown of all of our multiversal sort of characters, some of whom we're very familiar with, which include Captain Peggy Carter from What If, although not that version of her, but another version of her. We get Maria Rambeau's version of Captain Marvel, essentially implying that she basically takes Carol's place. We get Blackagar Boltagon, aka Black Bolt, played by Anson Mount, who played him on the short-lived Inhumans show. Blackagar Boltagon. That is his name.
Is that like a name for the comics? Name.
Oh yeah, that is his actual name.
Yeah.
Yep. I love that they make fun of that.
I am sure Sam Raimi found that in something. He's like, you know what? We're putting that on.
It's not obscure. It's pretty common.
Oh, his name?
His name is pretty well known.
I knew his name.
Yep, same.
And
I did not. It is so dumb.
He is a member of the Illuminati. Captain Marvel isn't, well, at least as far as I know, he has never been a member of the Illuminati.
But she's taken the Iron Man slot, right?
And Captain Carter is a new character, so.
Yeah.
Right.
She has not been either.
But our other two big ones are Charles Xavier, who, of course, we knew in the trailers is being played by Patrick Stewart. I will say this
Sir Patrick Stewart.
Sorry. My apologies.
to you.
I will say, for me, One of my first exposures to the world of comic books was the 1990s X-Men series, which holds a very dear place in my heart.
Yeah.
This version of Xavier is basically cribbed directly from that, down to the floating yellow chair. The music theme that introduces him when he comes on is the X-Men 90s theme, which is awesome. And even the scene where he uses his telepathic abilities, they show like the rippling rings out from his head.
I love that so much.
Also classic X-Men cartoon. And then finally, our first MCU version of Reed Richards, aka Mr. Fantastic, played by none other than John Krasinski. So I have now been,
Jim from The Office.
I have now been to high school with a member of the MCU, and I feel very excited.
Oh, yeah. I forgot you went to high school with that guy.
I've been in a play with a member of the MCU. How do you like that?
Wow.
Really? Yeah. I did not know that. I didn't know you knew him.
I don't really know him very well, but he was, when we were in elementary school, he was the lead in the musical version of Annie that we put on. He was Daddy Warbucks.
Oh, that's
And I was
that's
a
cool.
servant
really
in Daddy Warbucks' mansion with maybe probably no lines, but yes.
Oh, that's cool and cute. I didn't know he'd been a thespian from a young age. That's cool.
Apparently, that was the. I saw him in. This is total sidebar, but I read an interview with him in the Boston Globe a few years ago, and he mentioned that before going into professional acting, his only experiences in school were a fifth grade musical and a high school show. And I was like, I was in one of those, and I was at the other one.
You were instrumental to his career.
He would not have gotten where he is without me, is all I'm
saying.
That's
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Me neither, Dan. Me neither.
Anyway, yes, Reed Richards.
We need to have a word with you about that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's probably for the best. Reed Richards from the Fantastic Four. We discussed last week there is a Fantastic Four movie in development since the property reverted to Marvel when they bought Fox. Unclear whether or not John Krasinski, who had been heavily rumored to play Reed Richards.
Yeah.
Unclear whether or not this is a returning gig.
Yeah, like when I saw him on screen, I'm like, okay, either he is doing this or this is just
it's another stunt casting thing.
It's just like, to get rid of him, you know, like, oh, well, he was that. And then we shredded him.
Like
how do you
Pietro
feel about that?
In WandaVision.
Yep.
Yeah, so, like I don't think you can read it either way. I loved seeing him on screen. He did a good job.
Yeah. So, I think he would, I think he'd be perfectly good. I mean, I think he'd be, really. I mean,
Of course.
And so the thing that I was sort of alluding to last week was I had actually seen something indicating that he was in this movie, and people were talking about because the director, John Watts, had stepped down recently for Fantastic Four, and people were speculating, well, maybe Krasinski would direct it because he's directed both of the Quiet Place movies.
And they're good.
That's right.
They're like legit good.
There are rumors going along with that.
They're like legit horrors. You may not take them.
Yeah, it's not my thing.
And there've been rumors that go along with the rumors that go along with that, suggesting that Emily Blunt, who is his real life wife, might play Sue Storm.
Who knows?
I
think she'd be
they're
great.
Both good. Yeah. Like as silly stunt casty as that seems, whatever. They both seem lovely and great. You know, she was in that movie with Cause and Effect. In film form with Tom Cruise.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow, which is a great movie. That's a legitimately great movie. She can definitely do action stuff.
She's really good in that.
Yeah, she can do action. She's Mary Poppins.
She does comedy. I saw her recently.
She's great.
She did the Jungle Cruise movie with The Rock, and she is perfectly good in that. Like, it's
I have
a fun,
not seen that.
I have watched
don't
it.
Know
it was
why
a,
you have. Okay.
I like
you
know, that. I like that movie well
it
enough.
Was a very cheesy adventure movie, and she's really good in it.
You know what you're paying for when you go to see something.
100%.
And that's exactly what you get.
Anyways, really, also a relationship with Disney, clearly, so that never hurts. Anyways, so we are introduced to all of these Illuminati members who basically cop to the fact that, like, our Doctor Strange was not so great, and we let him defeat Thanos and then basically destroyed him.
So he used the Darkhold to murder Thanos, who is lying there with his sword through his chest, right? So he got murdered very physically rather than getting turned into butterflies or whatever the hell happens. And then Black Bolt, Captain Pike, whispers what I'm sorry
yeah
destroys him
right
And God, so, I wish we'd seen Matt Anson Mount's face. He's got a gorgeous face.
So handsome. Like, my wife routinely mishears me saying Anson Mount and thinks I'm saying handsome man, and she's like, but it's not wrong.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah, you may as well just call him handsome man.
Well, I was I forget where I was saying this, but I wanted to show the first episode to Karen, and I was like, did you see the trailer yet? And she's like, I don't know. She's like,
first episode, Stranger Worlds.
And she's like, I don't know. Pushes me off on all this stuff because I try and show her trailers every 15 minutes. And
oh, you have one of those
and
too.
She said, is it the one with the handsome man? I said, yes, that's right. One.
That's pretty much
then I did see it.
Very similar discussion in our household.
Okay, you know what? 5 minute Star Trek moment. It opens with him and his big old scruffy gray beard. There's a woman lying in his bed. Perfect. That is the most Captain Kirk-y. And like, I loved it. I honestly loved it. I loved that she was another captain and basically outranked him. That episode was some of the best Star Trek I've seen in a long, long, long time. Same. And I like the new ones. I really do. If you haven't seen that,
I like them well enough. I mean, you know, they go up and down, but
yeah, of course.
I generally like the new ones too.
This one is like
if you tuned out from the new ones, I kind of understand why maybe, but you should come back for this one.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's very like this is the Trek that you grew up with and loved.
Yeah.
Whether you grew up in the original series like I did, or if you grew up with Next Generation.
Yeah, I'm also an original series kind of person. And this one calls to the original series crew, right? But like...
Yeah.
Like, Picard's a little bit more stuffy. But back to this one, we had Picard and Pike on the same platform.
I did think about that at the time. As we sort of alluded, this leads into a basically massive fight scene where Wanda murders a lot of these characters. Some of whom hold their own in a pretty, like, much longer than, like,
yeah.
Kudos to Peggy. She really manages to give it a good go. And basically Reed Richards is shredded and Black Bolt has his head exploded, which is like a pretty clever. I thought both of those were clever
killing. That is clever. Yeah. What's dumb is Reed giving away his power to someone she didn't know who he was. She'd never met him before.
Yeah,
like,
but
she had no idea what his powers was. He's just like, by the way, this guy here, he can say words that are really powerful.
I kind of like that Reed's screw up there is that he's trusting and wants to defuse the situation. And for all he knows,
His behavior is it makes sense. Yeah.
But I
told you guys, but they shouldn't have sent Reed. They should have sent Sue because Sue would have wiped the floor with her.
Yes. Yeah. But as far as this Reed knows, that's his Wanda who he may have encountered before, right? Because she's powered.
No. Well, the body is, but he knows that the person controlling it is not. She's dreamwalking.
Right.
I guess so. And he has no respect for what Strange told him. Yeah, it's boneheaded. I mean, whatever. He paid the price, so.
Yep.
I was sad to see Peggy go.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Well, I was sad to see all of them go, really,
you know. But, I mean,
I think, you know, that Captain Carter, I think, has proved to be a popular enough character that I would be shocked if they didn't find some way.
They're all coming back in some way. You can't just write these characters. Like, you don't beat Professor X off and just be like,
I would think they would give her either a movie or... But I think maybe a series.
You're going to say a series? Like they gave her a series once before?
Well, yeah, no, I know. But they'll pay her a lot more this time.
Yeah, one would hope so. Yeah. That's a great show, by the way. And
wait, did it not pay her fairly last time?
Oh, I'm sure she was just not as big a name.
She was not as big a name. Yeah. And now she's a bigger name.
Yeah, so perfect. Yeah. But I think what's...
And I would imagine Disney Plus pays a lot more than something on...
One would hope.
Running... Right. As an afterthought on EBC,
it was a network show though. That's not nothing.
Yeah. I know, it was the interlude for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It wasn't even like a proper show.
It's a pretty proper show. How dare you insult Agent Carter?
Yeah, but Dan, it's like doing the Alfred series versus like doing the Captain America.
Yeah,
series,
I guess.
Right?
But I mean, or the Batman that series, that I was exactly. I think that's the best prototype they had for the streaming series that they've actually done. Honestly.
Yeah. That's sort of the template for it.
I think it was great, but I don't think they took it seriously.
No, I don't think they did either. But no. I mean, yeah, yeah. It got longer than the Inhumans, that's for sure.
Yeah. I do, in theory, feel bad for Anson Mount, except as discussed, he's handsome. Also, he's whatever. Things are going well for him right now.
Yeah.
I just wish we'd seen his face. I wish it had a few more words to say. That character does not
doesn't get words to say.
Yeah.
It so sucks. Like, because he's eloquent. He's charming. He's effusive. And you hire the guy not to say anything? That stinks. That's like an unenviable role for anybody.
Yeah. Well, you know, who knows? If that show had been decent, then he might not have been able to be Captain Pike.
Yeah, so always, it all works out.
So yeah. Count your blessings. I enjoy that Raimi's sort of murder spree is mostly like apropos, like, you know, Peggy gets bisected by the shield, Black Bolt gets his head exploded, Reed gets shredded. It seems to fall down a little bit with Maria, who is basically
literally
hit by a big statue.
Well, it's kind of tough to... I did like that they were sort of evenly matched, because I went back to like, oh, wait, Wanda's powers derived from blah, blah, blah stone, and Maria's from blah, blah, blah stone?
Maria's...
Wait, which one? Maria's the power stone, right?
The power stone.
Yes.
No, the space stone.
Space stone.
And Wanda's is the reality stone.
Yeah.
Reality stone.
So, okay. But
that makes sense.
Yeah. I guess
Mind stone.
The mind stone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird because their powers are reality bending, which always makes me think it's the reality stone, but the reality stone is the ether.
And also
ether.
Her powers look red, except she got it from an orange stone.
Yeah, so come on, people.
That doesn't make any sense.
Come color code anyway, this stuff.
Let's fire up the Excel spreadsheet on this one.
I was very surprised by this fight. I mean, I was surprised that they were willing to basically kill all these characters like 5 minutes after you've met them.
Yep.
I did not
and
expect
I thought that.
That
was pretty. I thought that was pretty gutsy and cool.
Yeah, I agree.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. And I could feel, I don't know if it was, I'm going to invent this, like Sam Raimi just saying, well, I'm going to kill all these people. And haven't, you know, I'm sure there was some pushback. Honestly, I could see Feige being like, yeah, go for it, whatever. We've got,
We can bring it back.
It's not a big deal.
That's the thing.
But I can see some reticence to that. And I know that there's been some pushback about A, any of them going out like chumps, B, specifically Charles Xavier, which did feel...
Well, he did okay.
He did great.
He's another one who held his own for a while, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
he was the last one to go.
Yeah.
But he was also the last one to fight, so...
Well, definitely when working as a team, always go one by one. That's just works every time.
It's hard to fight effectively as a team.
Just stand there while Reed gets shredded.
Yeah, maybe they should have had an Avengers instead of an Illuminati.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a bit of a complaint. I think it is a bit of a complaint of mine too. Is that they don't seem like they're the brightest. Maria seems extremely dismissive of Wanda's abilities. Like they don't. You don't know this one. You might want to listen to him for 5 minutes. But
I do think that when you call yourself the Illuminati, you are arrogant as hell.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know, like the Avengers are at least like...
Yeah, and it's not like the Illuminati in the comic book. He hasn't made any mistakes either.
Right,
Sending Hulk to into space.
Yeah. I loved the mindscape. What do they call it? The spectral... Who knows?
Astral plane.
There you go. It's all white. It looks like where Neo goes to pick up a lot of guns in the Matrix, except there's just all broken down stuff. I loved the aesthetic and the thoughtfulness of that. Like, it's not trippy or anything. It's just a blank slate with the pertinent things going on in her mind. And Wanda finds herself buried in the rubble after the bomb went off as a child. She's grown up, but that's the framework for her mental state that we get. And I thought it worked really well with the character and really well visually. It got the point across. I like the red mist coming up from behind him. I like that he sensed that he was going to get it before he turned around.
There's a brief, I love the brief throwback there to, there's a TV playing WandaVision.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that because it's sort of the tip of the hat to the like... She both the fact that she loved the TV growing up, right, as we saw in WandaVision, and she watched all the old sitcoms, and so
and
like
she's buried under rubble,
right? Exactly. All of that is something that. What's nice about that is a place where yes, we expected you to kind of do your homework and see the earlier stuff, but we're also not going to spend 5 minutes discussing it. Oh, I see you're buried under rubble. Could this be because as a child you were in a home that got bombed? No, we're not going to do that. figure it out for yourself. It doesn't really matter if you don't, but it enhances your experience if you know what's going on.
Right. And to the Biff, but more specifically, the Molt's doctrine of superheroes, Professor X is just there to save her, right? He just wants to save a little girl from the rebel. That's all he wants to do. He wants to help her so that he can defuse the situation. Also, I'm not entirely sure he's dead. Like, he in the astral plane, he gets his neck snapped and he slumps over in his chair.
If you die in a dream, whatever, we all know you die in real life.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe you got a headache or something. He just passed out, but whatever.
take some Excedrin, Professor X.
Well, I've seen Professor X die a lot. By the way, Professor X versus redheads never goes well for him.
That's true. That's not the first redhead I've seen kill Professor X in a movie.
It's brutal. Yeah.
Poor Charles. Well, I mean, again, I don't know what this means for the future of any of these characters.
Yeah, but who cares?
Yeah,
it's to establish that one is a serious threat.
It's delightful, and it's a fun bit for, you know, deep fans and fans of all these different properties. I thought the filming of it was very dynamic and fun. And then it sort of culminates after Wanda's murdered all of them in, we have Mordo and Strange go at it a little bit in some...
That's a good fight, too.
That's a good fight, too, because they don't have magic, so they have to just sort of go back to their martial arts.
Yeah, exactly. And also, he's getting at him. Like, he's poking at him and he's
something that he's good... Something that Steven is very good at, getting under your skin.
Yeah, he's just being a jerk.
Yeah. Also, it's a palate cleanser, right? After the super duper over the top fight, it's
very personal, down to earth. And at this point, we also, I think, we should bring in. We see earlier in the movie our universe's Christine Palmer, who is getting married, and Steven has gone to the wedding. I don't know about you guys. I've never gone to one of my. Wait, that's not true. I went to one of my ex's weddings. but let me tell you this:
I have not been invited.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I've been invited. And I just couldn't make it. I would definitely go.
I went to one, and I will tell you, even there, someone who I was really good friends with, did not spend their time chatting with me at the bar about what went wrong in our relationship at their wedding.
I know that's a little weird. But you have to set it up for the
fine.
People who maybe haven't seen the movie in a while or never saw the movie or whatever. Yeah. So
I like the idea of attending the ex's wedding where their spouse is a huge fan of yours.
That was fun.
And then you do the most James Bond thing possible, which is you knock back your martini, you say thank you, and then you jump off a balcony and fly away to save the day.
And he's like into it too. Yeah. Like, he comes out and he's like,
I know, that's such a great revenge. I'm like, okay, fine. Maybe
your
ex didn't work out. But, but come on.
Yeah,
There's no way that your husband thinks I'm not the best guy here.
Ridiculous as it is, that scene is very funny. I agree.
Yeah.
We also meet the alternate universe, Christine Palmer, who is working with the Illuminati as a scientist and an expert in multiverse stuff.
Thank God that they gave Rachel McAdams. Thank you. Stuff to do.
Yeah.
Because I was scared when we saw the wedding. I'm like, oh God,
is that it?
Like,
I'd seen her in the trailer in like that uniform. I knew there was another one that we were missing.
I try to push trailers out of my mind while I'm watching.
It didn't occur to me that she would necessarily
trailer checklist.
I hear you on that one, but it did not occur to me that she would be a multiverse version of herself. It just didn't click for some reason in my head when I was watching it. I agree with Guy. This feels like a nice redemption. And I feel like originally, I'm not sure she was supposed to be in this movie. She was announced later, I think, than everybody else. So I wondered if they were trying to coax her back and be like, hey,
yeah, probably.
We didn't do the greatest job in the first movie, but we're going to give you. And I mean, I think what's nice about this movie is it does give her a little, not only more to do, but it gives a nicer arc for her and Steven. We get the flashback scene. When he and America are in the alternate universe and they get the scan for their memories, which was creepy but also weird, and we see that flashback to her giving him the watch, and the fact that he feels all the regret essentially over, how their relationship has gone, and then he kind of gets a chance to tell her all the things that he couldn't tell his universes, and we learn a lot about him being kind of, afraid of commitment and all this. And so I enjoyed that aspect of some closure, that relationship. And I enjoyed even more the point that he doesn't end up with her at the end, that he's like, all right, I told you this, and now we go separate ways.
And he's okay with it.
Yeah, in fact, it's him. Yeah. It's him moving on, right? Like that, which is what he should be doing.
It doesn't hurt that you move on to Charlize Theron. That's, it's like, okay.
Well, we've all been there.
No, it does not.
But I thought,
but no, I really liked it, and she got one of the most Sam Raimi schlock horror moments ever. Like she. What was it? She had some cannons? She MacGyvered a cannon out of something? I don't know. She says, like,
the cauldron. Was that the cauldron of the cosmos?
It's the cauldron of something. Sure. It has a name. I don't remember what it is because she recognizes it.
Whatever. But she blows away a bunch of specters. Right.
Pretty great.
I'll send you back to hell or something. Go back to hell. Like, it's the line doesn't make sense. Nothing makes sense. It's all goofy. I love it. It was perfect.
Yeah, just it's a good bit.
Joyous, silly fun. Good work.
So, I mean, personally, I'm not convinced. I think that may be the last we see of Christine Paul, frankly. Like,
That's okay.
Which is fine. It's fine. They did a nice job rehabilitating her after the bad job they did in the first movie.
And I mean, I like her in that, you know, I like her. She's just she's not given enough to do.
Well, it's tough.
Other than scream, even though she screams very well and very funny in that one scene where the broom falls over.
That is.
She's like, great. All this stuff happens and then she's left standing there and a broom falls over.
But it's like the other famous person that Dan knows, who's now a Thor.
We're well
acquainted. Didn't you meet her once?
We walked up past each other on the street. We have not met. That would be overselling.
Well, I mean, close enough. God. Yeah, you and Lex always with the claims to fame.
So I thought that wrap up of that storyline was pretty good, and I like the way that it informs Steven's storyline. I do have a nit to pick about that sort of segment later on where they're dealing with the evil Doctor Strange. I thought the, like, when he's like, prove that you're me, and he tells him the backstory about, like, his sister dying, I thought was terrible. Let's just invent a sister who died. Let's not even bother,
apparently that's from the comics, because I was like, okay, that's a little weird.
But it's sloppy.
But still.
It's unnecessary.
It's like, I mean, these are alternate realities. They could both not have, I mean, one could have the sister, the other one.
Right. Yeah, a lot of different things you could have done there. I didn't think that needed to be brought up. And it does reek of literal fridging. She falls under the ice. And so
I thought you don't even need that.
Exactly. And I thought it was also a little bit of a...
Just have him accept it.
It was a little bit of a... I just wanted to say it was a little bit of a disservice at the same, because we saw basically the exact same plot line in Moon Knight like 2 weeks ago with him losing his brother. So I felt like... You can't predict that, whatever, but it felt weak, especially after that one gets explored in much more detail.
Yeah, so A, I agree. B, Peacemaker did the same thing. I forget. There was another one I brought up during the Moon Knight that did something.
Well, Peacemaker, he kills. I mean, I guess he gets.
Yeah. This one felt
lazy. He doesn't really kill him in Moon Knight.
This one felt lazy, I think, is the issue.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, or this one.
So there's two things. A, it did stick out to me too, but I think I've come to terms with it. It's A, from the comics. That does not mean you need to import it into this world. Please don't. If something's dumb, don't bring it in. C, Killmonger / any number of awful things from the comics that we don't need. But the notion that he couldn't save his sister, and that is the root of his drive to be in control and drive to, as Christine keeps saying, to be the one holding the scalpel. Makes some sense to me. It worked.
Okay.
And it's not.
I just don't
it's
think
not
he needed
so,
it at that point.
I know. I think I'm reading.
That he has to be in control.
I know. I think I'm stretching for this subtext and to try to find why he wants to be in control.
Endgame is that arc between Infinity War and Endgame. I mean, he's the only one who knows the master plan. He's clearly a guy who needs to be in control. He has told no one else what the plan is.
Yeah, and so for me, I think it gave me a little bit of the genesis of that. And you're right. Dan had not thought about it being a literal fridging. That's
I just
think,
cool. So, well, there's that. Yeah. And I mean, you know, which the comic book world is full of stuff like that, obviously.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Also, really.
Anyway,
we're going to need to move along, because otherwise we're not even going to get to America Chavez.
Well, we should. Yes. So let us move along. Do you want to talk about America Chavez next?
Yeah.
Let's do that.
I think she was great. I mean, I really enjoyed her character. The actress is fantastic, and I hope I imagine we'll see her some more.
You know what?
The thing that I
Oh, I just want to say quickly, sorry, one thing that blew me away about the actress in particular was she's 14. Like,
oh man, what? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
She, I just really, she was like, she was, I like 29. She was like 29. Like she was 14. Yeah.
No, she, so this is Xochitl Gomez, and she is really good in this movie. And I feel like,
yeah,
I'm hopeful with the fact that she's so young that it means like there's a lot more to like for her to do, right? With this character.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. That's an amazing feather in her cap for, I mean, just like such a good performance in. At that age, is, you know, God knows what I was doing at that age. But the thing that bugged me about the character in the movie, though, which is a writing thing, not an acting thing, is just that they shorthand that, you know, like the whole, it's another trope of like, oh, the power was within you all along. And it's one of my complaints about the whole story, I think, along with the stuff with some of the stuff with Wanda. It's just, it makes, you know, it works okay, but it's stuff that I've seen before in shows and movies for years and years.
I mean, isn't
so,
that always the thing? Isn't that Luke and on Dagobah kind of thing?
Well, yeah, so it's Luke and,
I mean, it is
Luke
a trope
episode
for
four.
Sure.
I mean, it's, you know, it's like, you know, you can do it.
In some ways, I was okay with it because I think for me, as I mentioned earlier, in a first movie for a character, you kind of always end up doing this origin story. And in this one, we don't get that with Steven, but we kind of get it for America. Like, it's her sort of origin story of realizing how to control her powers. It feels very much in that vein of Captain Marvel, in terms of, like, you know, realizing that there is power in you that you can control. Yeah. And that is it happens to be a trope I enjoy. I think
I think her thing, though, is, I mean, she actually has, like, the inhibitor chip on her, and she takes it off. I mean, she realizes that thing is not there giving her the powers. It is controlling, it is inhibiting her powers. And so that is a better explanation for me, as opposed to, you can do it.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I liked the explanation for me that it was like, yes, it seemed like when she was really afraid, these powers kicked in. But I liked Steven pointing out that, like, we basically ended up where we needed to be. Like, even if it was a painful and, like, unfortunate the way we had to go through this, it brought us to the moment we needed to be at. So in some sense,
I feel like it's a, like I said, it's a thing that I've seen before. And given the other problems with the structure of the story, was it just adding...
It's fair. It bothered me less than some other stuff in the movie.
It is a bit like it's a very mutant, like a nascent mutant kind of thing, right? Like we saw.
Is she a mutant in the comic books? I forgot.
No, she's from another. Whatever. She's from another dimension.
Yeah, I know she's from. Yeah. She's just from another.
I think she's. Yeah,
that's an explanation.
Where they can all do that?
Yeah, sure.
Whatever.
I don't know.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, she's. She's the spot of Mr. Mixelplick and somebody else.
The Impossible Man.
Yeah, I don't know that.
The Impossible Man and Mr. Mixelplick. Yeah.
I don't know that character as well. I've seen them in some stories, but I didn't really know all of their background.
Yeah.
So, but I've enjoyed that character. I know that character is very popular. And I think she's a Young Avengers.
Yeah, I was gonna say
I believe so.
Just structurally in the MCU, we are very clearly setting up an MCU, the Young Avengers.
Yeah. Right.
Seems like it.
Yeah.
We'll watch.
I mean, the characters that they have brought together for that so far are great, right? Like,
we got Haley Steinfeld.
We got Kate Bishop. We've got America Chavez. Yeah. We've got presumably Kamala Khan. We've got. I guess if
Florence
you want to count Florence Pugh, if you want to count Yelena, she's in there too. There's others they could pull in as well if they want to, but
including Wanda's, these two goofball kids.
Yeah, Wanda's kids are in it.
Including
in the comic books.
Yeah, in the comic books, there's also
currently too young.
Patriot, who is
that guy, the kid who's
Isaiah Bradley's grandson.
Who we did meet in.
Yes, he shows up briefly in Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Kid Loki, throw him in. Yep, all sorts of people. Anyways, lots of possibilities for them doing that in some fashion or another. I think they're doing a nice job of slowly building in these characters. But like, you could throw Riri Williams in there too as well.
Oh yeah, and she will have her own show soon.
Yep. So lots of that building clearly happening. Also, Kang is one of their big like villains. I think in one of them.
Well, he's
because one of the versions
he's
of
actually, him. He's actually the Iron Man at the beginning.
One of them is the Iron Man version, but I think they also fight King the Conqueror at some point too.
Yeah.
So anyways, lots going on there.
Right.
But yeah, I like this character a lot. I enjoyed the sort of way that they have become accustomed to traveling through universes and like blending in, mm-hmm. and stuff. I love the bit about like food,
yeah.
and how most people just give you food. Like, your universe is weird in making you pay for food.
I love that so much. I love
also
it.
The pizza balls, which look both gross and delicious.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I've got such a soft spot for like sci-fi, whatever
social commentary.
Yeah, yeah. Like on Star Trek, how they really mm-hmm. hate ice, and which is like very in your face kind of thing. And here,
or about
food.
The Civil War, like why Civil War? Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. I don't want to get too much into that because I loved it, but like this, yeah. Why do you have to pay for food? What? Like, and then it turns out that she does have to pay for food, but it's Bruce Campbell, so screw that guy. I did feel like a little bit of horror about that, like the hand is going to be beating him up for 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's a long time.
It was pretty
like
brutal.
3 minutes would have been kind of extreme, right. Steve. Right. Like 3 weeks is crazy. That's brutal.
Well, it is the multiverse of madness.
Well, I mean, maybe like he's not going to last that long, so he's going to cut his hand off, and like next time we see him, he's going to have a chainsaw
hand.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Ooh, yes. Origin story. Yeah, so I think America Chavez, great character. I know some people felt like they didn't give her enough to do, but I felt it's tough. There's a lot of stuff to wedge into this. I thought she was pretty dynamic and fun throughout.
Me too.
I don't know if I agree with that because, well, so yeah, she is a little bit of a utility, right? Right. On the other hand, she's not just a MacGuffin. Strangers dragged along in her wake as much as anything else, right?
Yeah,
sort of find that out at the end, right? She's actually at some level directing where they go.
Yeah, and I like his, you know, big brother-ish relationship with her, which felt like a corollary to some of his relationships with Peter, except maybe on a better footing. Like,
well, it felt like Tony and Peter to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Like, I'm looking out for you, and I like that comes to culminate in which, like, at the end, she's like, "You're gonna, you know." Are you going to kill me, basically, like, you know, the other Stephen Strange tried? And I enjoyed that. He's like, no, I'm not going to kill you.
Can we give 100 ghost biffs to the fact that the speech at the end of the movie is delivered by a zombie? Yeah. It's a heartwarming speech from a rotting, fetid zombie face, and it works.
Yeah, and it's not, and I was, you know, I think I said after we watched the trailer, I was like, clearly we're going to get zombie
from What If.
Strange and zombie. Yeah. And I thought we also had zombie Wanda. We didn't have either of them, really.
Yeah, so I liked, so the Wanda thing was actually a fun bit because they kind of do like a Carrie riff, but it's Grease because she's just been disassembling all the robots, which I enjoyed. And then the strange thing, I love the bit where he's like, well, nobody ever said they had to be alive. And I thought, oh no, you know, and it's like that whole bit is great because you did not expect the zombie to be the hero. And that's fun.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that was fun.
Looks great. And it was just, I thought that was inspired. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Which basically brings us to the end of the movie, where Wanda realizes she done wrong, after she scares her kids.
America Chavez reveals that to her, right?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. Yeah.
If there's one line I could maybe take out, it's that Steven said, like, she's about to close the portal on her, and so Steven says, just wait, not yet, which is, makes some sense from a more mature point of view. Like, kid, I know you're trying to just get rid of this creature, but there's some closure.
Audience needs to see the lesson.
Well, I guess it's the audience, but it's also like I think he's more aware of the transformative power that's about to like sort of hit her in the face, whereas America Chavez is more like, I just pushed the monster away kind of
well
thing.
He knows her, right? Really, I mean, that's the thing, like, they're nominally friends, and that's...
So, yeah, if I think about that too much, then it seems like she's just dumping Wanda on them, which is not good, right?
Yeah.
I would think she must know, like, that her idea of sending her there was, like, let's see if you like it, you know, because you're...
Right.
I don't think you are going to like it. Did she know that, or did she not know that? I think that she did know that, which means Strange's line doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's a little confused. I got it in the moment, yes. And as I think back on it, I'm like, I don't really get what was going on. But it did set up Wanda coming back to whatever, 616, I suppose. I was about to say our world, but 616, yeah. In order to destroy Mount Wendigar, Gore, and all of the, whatever they're called, Book of the Damned.
All the Darkhold.
Yeah. Darkhold.
Thank you, Darkhold. At one point, they call it the Book of the Dead, which I thought was a shout-out to the Book of the Dead from Army of Darkness.
No, they use that in WandaVision as well.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I guess they wanted her back there to be able to dismantle it. And ultimately, the only resolution for that character was to...
kill herself.
Yeah, but I don't like
bury
saying
herself.
That
really.
I'm not.
Like, yeah, I don't like
I'm
saying that. On
she's
on
not dead.
I'm not convinced she's dead either.
I'm not convinced she's dead either. We've already seen another Wanda that can come and like take her place without any of the
baggage. At the very least, I would think that.
Yeah, and be depowered back to Civil War era juice. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Cool. Fine.
Oh, and I will say, I mean, I think Elizabeth Olsen did a fantastic job.
Great.
I don't really like some of the choices that they made with the character, and I have some problems with the plot. But she was terrific.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she and Sochi Gomez are two of the standouts here.
Yeah.
I like Benedict Cumberbatch a lot. He still always doesn't always land for me. I think he does better in some parts than others. I think this storyline, I think my biggest issue with this was I didn't love Steven's arc in this movie because it's it's kind of muddy to me. Like I don't know what he learned or what his growth was. Like I like that he moves on at the end from his relationship with Christine. That bit is pretty good. I like that he protects America. I like that, but they felt they felt kind of jumbled. Like there's just a lot thrown in there. And there's not a very clear through line to me.
I think he learned from Wanda what his counterpart in What If did not learn, which is like chasing the thing that you most desire is going to corrupt you and you're going to end up being bad and like not, you will never achieve it. Like you can't just do that. And it's not in the text. It's not super clear. But I mean, that was at least my takeaway from his arc. And
that's a good takeaway. Okay, I mean, that's
not a bad
takeaway.
I just think it could have been clearer in the text.
I agree.
This is my point.
Yeah,
like,
as well.
I
agree with both of you.
Ooh, very, very clever of you. Yeah. I
don't know.
Also, because the thing at the end with the third eye and then the post-credit scene where he's got the third eye and goes off to help fight evil, and you're like, so he is evil or not, or is that just fine?
Yeah,
like he's just got a third eye now. Everything's cool.
Is this a double? I mean, is this sort of a WandaVision ending? Or is Steven now going to be evil? I mean,
it was kind of it was a little muddy for me, and I think that's one of my issues here.
I agree, and yet very Army of Darkness. Like, who knows? Just random crazy stuff happens at the end, like that walking down the street, almost looking like Peter Parker in Spider-Man 3 when he's all like
doing like the finger guns, you know.
Yeah, like if he was like sliding down the street being all dancy and happy, I would have totally dug it. But yeah, just in the middle of the road falling down and screaming is a very Sam Raimi kind of thing, and having his third eye open, very cool. In the first movie, because I watched the first movie after I watched this, what's her name, the current Sorcerer Supreme, touches him in the middle of the forehead and says, open your eye at one point. Like gives him that massive acid.
The ancient one. Yeah,
the ancient one. I don't know. I'm cool with it. I mean, he has messed with the Darkhold. We understand that there is some evil in him now. That's what I took from it. And how he deals with that is, I think, probably, you know, fodder for the next movie, where I imagine we'll see Baron Carl Modo.
Carl? Oh, yes, the Carl reveal is great. Carl?
Apparently that's his real name.
I knew it was his real name in the comics. Yes, but like,
totally that. Yeah. I love that he's like, Carl?
I didn't even remember that they didn't mention it in the first movie.
I think he's just called Mordo the whole time.
He's just called Mordo,
Carl? Anyway, so, and that makes sense, right? Like, if he's struggling with his own evil, they're going to go fight evil, blah, blah, blah. Mordo comes to get him, sort of thing. That makes some kind of sense. And I feel like that wraps up a three, you know, like a little trilogy of Doctor Strange kind of thing. Like, learn who you are, learn where you screwed up, defeat the own evil in your heart. And you get to walk off into the dark dimension with Charlize
Theron.
Whatever it is you do at that, like you've kind of done the arc kind of thing. So I dig it.
Yeah, we have Charlize Theron shows up at the end there playing, I believe, I don't know if this is officially confirmed.
Who cares? It's Charlize Theron.
playing Clea, who is a sorcerer.
No, she's credited as that.
Yes, I believe that's true. Yeah. The Sorcerer Supreme in some versions of the Marvel continuity and someone with whom Doctor Strange has a romantic relationship.
Right.
Did your costume seem a little janky to you? It was very comic booky.
It was not a character.
It was comic booky.
Yeah, it was. It's not a character. I was okay with it.
I mean, they'll probably change it between now and the next time she appears.
So it's not a character I was immediately familiar with. I knew the name, but like I didn't immediately know who it was because I saw the purple blade and I was like, "Is she Psylocke?" Like that seems weird.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, Olivia Munn showing up at the end of the movie would be a little bit funny too.
But I did. We should also take. I just want to give like 2 minutes. Call out to Benedict Wong playing Wong, who is one of my favorite
Good
parts
job.
Of this movie and any movie. He shows up in. Yeah. I love the ongoing bit with him and Steven kind of fencing about bowing. Is a tradition. Mm-hmm. Bow to the.
I like this scene. Bow to the end.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, yeah.
Because they're
nice.
Friends. Like they're clearly buddies. Yeah. I love their dynamic. I think their dynamic is a lot of fun. I like that this ends without him making like. There's never a big deal about him not being the Sorcerer Supreme after, like, you know, the technicality joke in No Way Home. But then, like, I don't think he really begrudges him at all. Like, as he points out, like, a lot of paperwork and stuff you have to do, which I think is great.
And in fact, when Wanda shows up, Wong's like, okay, don't screw this up. Like, go say good stuff. Like, you're kind of delegating the fate of your entire... You know, being like everything that is in their head, you're just delegating it to Steve-O, which is, you know, maybe not a good idea, but he's
the guy who cast the memory spell in the previous movie.
Right. Yeah. Like just
but nobody,
3 months
nobody
ago,
remembers
he totally
that,
screwed
so
everything
it's fine.
Up.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. I guess that's right.
Oh, God. Does Steven remember that?
Well, there's some debate about that because he mentions Spider-Man early on.
But they just talk
they call
about
him Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. I mean,
they said there was something with Spider-Man in the multiverse. They knew about that, but they don't.
Can the Sorcerer Supreme cast a spell to make even the Sorcerer Supreme forget?
Doesn't he say that he'll forget at the end of Spider-Man? I think he does.
Like he did.
Well, he's going to. He forgets Peter, like not necessarily the whole. Yeah, I guess he'd have to. He would have to forget. I don't want to think about this. I'm going to blackball my head.
Don't do that.
Yeah, I enjoyed Benedict Wong a lot. Also, the very strange reappearance of Michael Stuhlbarg in the opening scene.
That was fun.
Which is fun, and it's a character in the comics, but he appears for basically just to give Steven grief about the blip.
Right.
Like his cats die, which is funny and weird,
but I don't really understand it. Like, I mean, I don't know. They could have done without that too, but I guess it's just.
It felt Sam Raimi-ish to me though, right? Like, let's just
maybe
throw some weird stuff in here.
Yeah, I don't know. He is a character in the comics, and I don't know if there's a, like, you know, he shows up. I don't know. Maybe they're building him up for something in the future. I don't know.
Maybe they think they have an idea for him in the third movie.
But he's not like Michael Stuhlbarg is a, he's not like an A-list actor, but he's like a high profile actor. It's, you know, funny for him to show up for 2 minutes, but sure.
Yeah.
You're Marvel. You can afford it.
Right.
All right. We could go on forever and we basically have, we should do a, do you want to do a ritual? Not that kind of ritual because that could be dangerous, but should we do a rating for this?
That's what we do. For.
John Maltz, I call upon you.
I'm giving it a John Jr.
Oh, interesting.
Wow. Because of some of my issues with the plot and my sort of dissatisfaction with what they've done with Wanda. There's a lot that I liked about it. And I went through, like, I had a severe phase with this movie because I saw it and I've really enjoyed it. And then I thought about it a lot and I enjoyed it less and less every time I thought about it. So, and it was basically, it was all plot stuff for the most part. Well, yeah, I mean, and, you know, I mean, considering the Wanda's character arc as part of the plot. Like I said, I just feel like they kind of redid what they did with WandaVision. They just did it a little bit bigger and eviler. And okay. I mean, that's not generally why I want to watch
Second verse, same as the first, John.
Hero, my hero shows. You're ruining my hero shows with bad heroes. So anyway,
you're ruining John's stories.
That's right. You're ruining. Someone's ruined my stories again. So I struggled over it for a while, and then I was like, no, I'll watch it again for sure. I mean, I like all these movies, but I also want to make it clear that this, I feel like this is a, you know, I think this is a lower tier one for me.
Mm-hmm. Guy?
I'm a little disappointed to hear John say that, because we were supposed to do The Batman this week, and John twisted our arms to do this one.
I did not twist your arm.
Because he loved it.
I suggested it.
Yeah, you dreamwalked right into my face.
I'd rather talk about this movie than that movie. Let's put it that way.
Okay, well, guess what? Next week, buddy.
Yep.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I don't disagree with you. I had a lot of fun. I really like the aesthetic of it. I like the way it moved. If you think about the story too much, yeah, things get a little wacky. If you think about the moments and sort of like the way characters work, I'm okay with it in the context of the film, while in the greater blah, 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 it's maybe a little iffy. I'm going to give this a biff for sure, and it is cemented by one scene that we didn't talk about. It is when Third Eye Blind Doctor Strange battles our Doctor Strange.
Oh yeah, the music
with music.
Yeah,
I like that.
It's a good scene.
Loved it. I loved it. It was creative. It was brilliant. It was beautiful. It was a great way to make visual.
Yeah, it's a way that his magic has not been shown before, too.
Yeah,
right.
It was original.
It reminded me of one of my favorite video games from LucasArts back in the day. A video game called Loom, which is an adventure game in which you cast spells through magic. I loved it. I thought that was just a really, really clever piece of filmmaking, and coordinated all of the departments, like from visual effects to the acting to the stunts to the sets to like props, and incorporated the, you know, the orchestra and the music to it. I loved it. I thought that was just a really, really clever piece of filmmaking, and for that alone, I'm going to give it a biff. And I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun. So, yeah, it's a biff for me. Dan?
I also wrestled with this a bit, and I think I'm going to have to go with my gut on this, which is, I think it's a John Jr. for me. I know. I'm surprised as anybody
Interesting.
Else. I came out of it feeling, I turned to my wife, and again, some of this colored, I think my wife didn't enjoy this as much, although I was like, you know, this is like a, it's like a B. Like, it's good, but it's not, it's certainly lower tier for me. And I like a lot of the moments, but overall, it didn't hang together as well. It wasn't as cohesive as some of the other movies. And so there's a lot of like great little bits that are thrown at you here and there. And I enjoyed a lot of them in and of themselves. But when it came to trying to figure out how stuff linked from like point A to point B, and not just from a plot standpoint, but from like a thematic standpoint as well, it kind of lost me along the way. And as I said, I felt Steven's arc was kind of muddy. It was, I felt like they kind of poked and prodded at it, but they couldn't quite, you know, straighten it out into a line that made sense to me. So overall, as much as I loved individual moments throughout this, it just didn't come together into a package that I felt like was something where it's like, oh man, that movie's great. I immediately want to go watch that movie again. Like I enjoyed it. I will watch it again, I'm sure, at some point. But for me, it's definitely down there as one of my, you know, it just didn't work for me as well. And there's things I really like about the first movie, but it's also not one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's not one of my
favorites. So maybe I just like Steven better as a supporting character in other, you know, Avengers or Spider-Man or whatever. Maybe that's just more my speed. I don't know. And in some ways, I wish this had been even weirder. I feel like
I could have gone with a lot weirder.
Yeah,
but I also like the alternate universes. Just like,
yeah, the alternate universe is a lot of fun.
And paint, I one where they're painting.
Yeah, that bit is over too soon, because like there's an animated one and there's a paint one, and like I want to delve. I wish they had just sort of full throttled that a bit
more.
Time yeah, because yeah. The one universe we ended up with is like, it's like a futuristic-y version of our universe with a lot of flowers, and I don't really know what is the point of this universe. Like, I didn't have a clear idea of that or picture of it in my head, so I just wanted a little bit more. So. Yeah, I was kind of leaning on like the Biff John
Jr. universe where Thanos was going to kill half the flowers.
Ah, should have let him do it. Would have been fine. You grow more. Sorry. I what's the big deal?
You monster.
Wow. I don't even have a joke for you. I'm just not your friend anymore.
Sorry. I'm just thinking about Thanos from What If. great character. Anyways, yeah. So, I just I was a little hem and hawing on it, and it didn't really grab me. I think part of it for me too was I saw this in a theater with there were literally five other people in the theater, and some of the especially things that comedy bits don't land as well when you don't have an audience and not everybody's laughing at the same thing. Some stuff I thought was funny. And then sometimes I would start to laugh and look around and be like, no one else is laughing. Is this weird? Should I not be laughing? Is this not funny? There's something, a psychological cue about being in an audience, a packed audience full of people who are all enjoying or reacting to the same things. And it's definitely harder when there's five people in a movie theater.
Huh. So. Well, for free thinkers, you may enjoy this movie. I don't mean that at all. I accept everything you say about that. I just wanted to be a bit of a jerk because I feel like that's weird. I feel like I'm out on the limb here.
That's fine. We can have different opinions.
No, it's not. It's not often I'm more positive. Yeah, definitely. It's not often I'm more positive. Yeah, that's all.
Right. Usually that's my job. I feel like I'm usually the one who likes everything.
Yeah, I mean, we want to give out John Jr.'s. We'll have James on.
Yeah, but get James Thompson back on.
You're lucky you don't get Alex's, is all I'm saying. All right. We should wrap up. I know we have a letter that we want to address, but I'm concerned we've gone on.
Yeah, we've gone on.
Yeah, let's do it next week.
Yeah, we'll save it after next week.
Are we going to do the Batman next week?
Yeah.
Unless something else comes up. Yeah, it looks better.
Unless there's a trailer
between now and then.
Unless the trailer drops for something.
Unless John changes his mind at the last minute again. Yeah.
Yeah.
But honestly, this is good. Also, it's our member drive month.
Yes, thank
you. I like that we're hitting movies. This is, if you're new to the show for this or the Batman next week, it'll give you a taste of the dumb stuff that we're going to say about whatever show we're talking about next.
Well, and we should talk about this. So this is the time of year when we get to remind all of you wonderful readers out there how you can support this podcast. And that is by becoming a member of The Incomparable, which is, of course, the fine network on which you find this podcast. And you can sign up for a monthly or annual pledge, and you can even support this podcast directly, which is great. So here's how you do it. You go to theincomparable.com/members, sign up. You choose which shows on the network you would like to support. And if you check the box for Biff, your contribution comes to us after the network takes its cut. The network and its cut. If you listen to other podcasts on the Incomparable Network, you can also check the boxes for those. And your contribution gets shared equally between all the shows you want to support. And we should mention that it's not just the warm feeling in your heart for supporting these hardworking podcasters every day down in those podcast mines, chipping away. No, you get stuff, too. Because you get extras like exclusive podcast feeds. There's an ad-free version of the Incomparable Mothership Show, which is our big weekly show that talks about all sorts of major things in pop culture. There's bootlegs of live recording sessions, which is stuff before it's edited, so you get to hear it before anyone else, which in some cases is a way before anyone else. Because I'll tell you, over on our D&D podcast, Total Party Kill, we've got a year worth of backlog. It's kind of bananas. There's also a special feed full of bonus episodes that only members get to hear, and new members get to receive some free Incomparable swag as well. Now, we recorded a member special this year in which we, the three of us, sat down and watched the 2012 The Avengers in honor of the 10-year anniversary, and basically did our own commentary track that you can go ahead and sync up with the movie and listen along as we discuss it, and then stick around for a little post-movie discussion at the end there. So
the director is kind of problematic. You should listen to us instead.
We are better. We are better. I feel comfortable saying that. Not one of us made The Avengers, but I think maybe if they'd given us a shot. There's two-person directing teams are really in these days. I feel like a three-person directing team is next.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
What could be worse? So there's contribution levels at $5, $10, and $20 a month. Annual equivalents are available as well. If you're already a member, it's also easy to increase your pledge to a higher level and get some additional special goodies in return, including, yes, some free Incomparable swag. So if you'd like to support the show, go to theincomparable.com/members to sign up. We really appreciate it. We appreciate everybody listening. It means a lot to us. this is a fun show that we get to do every week where we get to, you know, shoot the breeze about superheroes, some of our favorite stuff. And it's great. So thank you for your support. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We really appreciate when you support the arts. And then when you're finished with that, you can support us too.
Well,
I love art. What's this? Yeah, what?
You know, Ethan Hawke once said about podcasts, there's...
Oh, man, I no, love that Ethan Hawke clip. We'll bring it up next week when we'll have nothing to talk about.
That's right, yeah.
Like about the Batman for an hour.
Okay.
Well, guess what? It's just going to be like an hour and a half of silence, and then we'll go... Dun.
No, it's not. Oh, yeah, really, yeah. It'll be me walking slowly into a room.
I assume that's how you walk into all rooms, John. Anyways, thank you so much for listening. And of course, I would like to thank my compatriots for being here. John Moltz, always a pleasure.
This podcast is madness itself.
That is true. Accurate. Guy English, thank you for being here.
I would tear apart heaven and earth and a million different multiverses to just be with you two.
My only responses to that were very weird, so I'm not going to use them. Anyway, thank you everybody out there for listening. A special thanks to members as always, and we'll be back next week.